Okay, Rabosa, let's get started. Sorry, I'm a little late. The Rambam was the topic we left off with last week. Let's refresh our memories. The Rambam had a number of problems. It was an internal contradiction, and it was against the Gemara. The Rambam can be found refresh our memories exactly what page in this pack and how it was found. 48, is that what it was? Okay. 48. 46. Okay, 48, that's where Moshe goes to the Rambam. Okay, that's good enough. Thank you. Is it 8 you're saying? 8, okay. Page 8. Yes. Page 8, the Rambam writes, it's Perek Aleph Halacha Tes. Avsu mitzvah saseh shel lochos al nefesh harodeh. Lefichach horo chachamim shahubra shimak shalele mutal lachto chahubra shem bimeyeho. Bein b'sam bein b'yad meshu kerodeh pachareh al ahorga. Mishahote rosho ein nogin bo. Shein dochen nefesh b'fnei nefesh v'zeh tivo shel olam. So the question is as follows. If the baby is a rodeif, then why can't you kill the baby after Hotzi Rosho? Question one. Question two. The Gemara says the baby is not a rodeif. It's Mishmaya Karatfale. The Rambam seems to have paraphrased that when he said, Zeo Tivo Shalolam. So the answer that we gave was, based on what I heard from Rav Soloveitchik, that the word Kirodeif should not be understood to be the same as Kimoro, as Rodev, but rather Kimoro Dev. Where do we find Kimoro Dev? In the previous perek, at the end, in Hilchas Chovel Umazik, where the Rambam is describing the case, and I showed it to you last from the Torah's Chesed, describing the case of the person who had a very heavy weight on a boat, and someone else came and took the heavy weight and shoved it off the boat into the ocean, saved everybody. And they said, give me the money. What do you mean, give me the money? That way was kemorodev. That's an inanimate object. It's kemorodev. It means that don't expect payment for when the guy threw the weight off the boat, because that was kemorodev. It's not enough to be mater and iser of ritzicha. It's kemorodev. It's enough to be pater from paying. And here as well, in Halacha Tes, it's not really a rodev. Had it really been a rodev, the baby, we'd say it's mutter to kill the baby, even to save the mother, even after the baby's yotz hotzi rosho. The baby is not a rodev. It's kimolo rodev, kirodev. That's all. So why does the Rambam have to mention that? Just say, listen, it's the baby's in the way. Oh, not so pushit. Because even though it's not an isur of ritzicha, we're assuming for the moment, and therefore, since it's not an isur ritzicha, you don't need a real rodev to be matter to eliminate the baby. But there is some other issa daraisa. Let's say, for example, just to make it a long story short, isa chavala. You can't be mad isa chavala for some dubious reason. You have to have a serious reason. What's the serious reason? The baby is kirodev. Once the baby's head is out, then it's an isa ritzicha. And if it's an isa ritzicha, you need rodev mamish. It's not a rodev mamish. That's what we thought was taught in the Rambam. That's the case. I'm agree with everybody else. And we tried to, we said last time, Rashi, the Ran, and all the other indication that abortion, while prohibited in the Torah, is not murder. The baby is not a nefesh, as Rashi says in Sanhedrin. We wanted to put the Rambam in that camp as well. Rav Moshe had a different interpretation, just to refresh your memory. This is on page 48. He had the following interpretation based on the Yerushalmi. Again, page 48, the first column. The Yerushalmi says, the Shemaya Karafa does not mean you're not a rodek. Ela b'shvil zeh, it's about halfway out in the first column. Havushneim rotfim. So shoni Yerushalmi, ein at yodea mi horeg es mi. And he quotes from the before Shai Yerushalmi, Korban Eden Pnei Moshe, ein at yodea im hakotin rodef es ha'isha, o ha'isha rodef es es hakotin. V'hainet b'shmaya nasa shi yeshu shi yichu shneim. Tishivol Avlad Tomos Isha, Ushlo Yivolet Chaye, Shetse Evarm Evarm Tichyo Isha, Shalafichoch Manichan Adova Kamoshu. That's all. Shazeh Avi Behold Tirosho, Sheyeshno Tarvaya Beradifa. They're both drawn from Zazeh. Havuk Shaddai, Nuuba Bemeimo. Shibu Ubers Eno Adai and Nefesh Gomor. Shenimsa Shala Yisron, Sheikolaha Eme Uba. She nefesh gomor, who ain't on Adai and nefesh gomor, in our language we'll call it a dependent organism and an independent organism. Haveraka uber rode faymein or radefes, and not Yisron. Lekach yesh lanu laragas uber, we've been rode al Yisron zeh. This is the Ramoshes Gvaldig, a chiddush of pshat in the Rambam, based upon a Yerushalm. Okay, he said the Bavli is the same way. Rabbi Osai, his Chiddush Nifla Venora, which we ended this year with last week, is that being the case, you may not perform an abortion unless the chances, there's a majority chance, Korav Levadai, amazing. That's the last two lines in the second column of page 48. It says, it's also to kill the fetus, Achetia Umdana Lorofen Gedola Korav Levadai, Shetamus Aim. Can you imagine that? You need Karav Levadis. I had two questions around Moshe. Number one, even in a case where you really need a role, if really you need a Karav Levadai, the guy has a gun, and he's shooting, and you see the guy, his aim is so far off. The guy's mamish. Oh, yeah, but even if his aim is far off, he keeps shooting, there could be a 5% chance he's going to kill somebody. In my opinion, that's a role, if anyone. But Moshe sounds like he's saying, even in a real Roda, if you need Karav Levadai, he's going to kill somebody. To me, it's a Chiddush Nora, even in Hilchos Roda proper. That's number one. Number two, the way we're saying, you don't need Roda. It's enough to have what we call Kirodev. And for that, even a small percentage should suffice. And number three, in the real world which we inhabit, there's nobody, to my knowledge, in the whole wide world, who holds like a Moshe, the mice. They come to a doctor, and the doctor will say, yes, if the baby is not aborted, there's a 49% chance the mother's going to die. To the best of my knowledge, every rabbi in the world today and every doctor, and I'm not discussing the Catholic Church, before that last week, but every rabbi and every doctor will say, do the abortion. Even if it's a 49% chance. Abortion sounds like even 51 wouldn't be enough. It's Karav Levadai. How do you define Karav Levadai? Who wants to give a guess? What does he mean by Karav Levadai? 70%? 80%? 90%? What's Karav Levadai? Anybody? I would have said 90%. That makes us a mere shen and mossim. It's not heard of. No one holds this way. Anyway, I want to suggest, though, my own pshat in Yerushalmi against Rav Moshe, if I may. Notice that the Yerushalmi did not say what Rav Moshe said it said, and what the Karban Eda and the Pnei Moshe said it said. Eini odea mi rodei v'smi. Yerushalmi didn't say that. The Yerushalmi said, Eini odea mi Hore gets me. So wait a second. You should have said me Rode for me. So I want to make the following suggestion, my own radical suggestion. I don't think it's so radical. This is against Rav Moshe, the culminator of the same Moshe. I guess that's pretty radical. You got three Gedolim and you're just a loner. That makes by definition that's radical. But I want to say as follows. What the Yerushalmi means, Eini Odea mi Hore gets me. Not that they're both rofim. Then it should have said mi rodef is me. Eini odea mi horeg es mi means that neither is a rodef. Neither is a rodef. Why is neither a rodef? You know, I'll tell you why. I want to suggest that in order to be labeled as a rodef, you require what I call kavonas redifo. We mentioned this phrase last week. We spoke about a kotam. A cotton 10-year-old has a gun, so he's a rodef. The Gemara Sugi says in Masechta Sanhedrin we saw last Thursday. You know why? Because he wants. He knows what the gun means. He understands. It is his limited seichel. He's taking the gun. He saw it on TV. Bang, bang, you're dead. He wants to do what they did on the TV. Bang, bang, you're dead. He's only 10 years old, but he knows. Bang, bang, you're dead means you're dead. So he's a rodef. He has kavanas redifa. However, Mishmaya Karatfale, the expression of the Talmud Bavli, is echoed by the Yerushalmi, Ein yodeh mi horeg esmi means that neither intends to kill the other. There's a Kadosh Baruch who created in nature this terrible situation, which is, you know, what they call the one is a immovable force, a movable object, however they call it today, and between the two, one, they both can't survive it. Neither has kavana, intention, to kill the other. And if neither has kavana, ein yodeh mi horeg esmi, the bottom line of that is that neither is categorized as a role. Not the mother and not the child. Neither. It's interesting. There's a periodical came out called Or HaMizrach. Came out almost 18 years ago, Tishrei Tovshin Mem Vav. There's an article by Rabbi Dov Frimmer, who you may know who he is. He talks about this case, and he introduces another case. Rabbi Moshe Zashuv about this other case as well. What'll happen? A very sad story. The classical Holocaust story. There's a group of people hiding in a bunker, and a baby starts to cry. If the baby continues to cry, they'll kill everybody. You have a right to put your hands on the baby, stop them from crying, or the baby's going to die. Would the baby be considered a rodent? So, you know, this is a high-stakes case. You know, this is no joke. In my opinion, Rav Moshe would say, yes, the baby is a rodev, because Rav Moshe holds that to be considered a real rodev, you don't have to have any kavanas redifa. That's what Rav Moshe said. You don't have to tell Nishami, ain't your day any rodev, it's me, the baby should be rodev the other. No, there's no kavana. Let's say it's Karov Levada, the Nazis are coming, it's Karov Levada, they hear the baby crying. Again, it's hard to give exact numbers. I'm not sure what Rav Moshe's numbers were, and it's hard. Every case, when you're hiding in the bunkers, how you know what the numbers are exactly? Yes?
Doesn't matter like how directly the baby is affecting everyone else. In other words, in the case of the mother, the baby is not direct, more direct than in the case of the bunker?
Yeah, it's more direct, but nonetheless, according to Rav Moshe, it seems to me you could argue, certainly cogently, that the baby is a rodent. According to what I'm suggesting, the baby's not a rodent. No kavanas for defeat. They're just crying. A 2-month-old baby's crying. What? Yes.
Aren't there cases in Gemara where if someone comes to a city and says, "Give us one person, and we'll kill everybody"?
That's correct.
What to do? So isn't this the same?
Well, it's not quite the same. As a matter of fact, the Gemara, the way we Rambam passes in that kind of a case, if they come to you and say, "Give us one, and we'll kill you all," you can only give the one if that one is as chayav misa as Sheva ben Bichri. There's a Rabbi Yochanan's opinion in the Yerushalmi and Trumas. This baby's not chayav shemisa the five by any stretch, so therefore that your var wouldn't apply. Right? Yeah. Rav Moshe has a tshuva in a very interesting question. It was printed up in a few places. It was originally printed up in a, believe it or not, among other places, in a newspaper in Philadelphia. It was a Philadelphia story, a very interesting story, a very sad story. It was Siamese twins. Attached to the heart, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And one had 4 chambers, one had 2 chambers, it was a 6-chamber heart, it was a terrible thing. So the doctors came, there were 2 babies, they called the baby A and baby B. One baby was a goner. No way the baby could survive at all, ever. If you do nothing, both are going to die. If you do an operation, then one will die, he's going to die anyway. And the other one, we hope, will live. It's a real life story. It happened to a couple, if I'm not mistaken, from Lakewood, New Jersey, from the yeshiva in Lakewood. And they went to Rav Moshe. And there's a whole article in Philadelphia. It was in Philadelphia. I think it's a famous children's hospital. There's a famous hospital in Philadelphia. And they had some kind of Catholic connection, because there was a discussion about the ethicist, what to do. The ethics committee in the hospital is dealing with it. And Rav Moshe, they have flashback. Rav Moshe is dealing with it. In Rabbi Tendler's house, and all the children are there. It's a very interesting human interest story. Coop, right. Now they became the Surgeon General. Right. He was the surgeon at the time. This is.
He was head of children's hospital
at the time. Right. It was an international case. and it was like a single Kiddush Hashem that they're all the doctors and the ethicists and they're all waiting for what the rabbi in months is going to say. And they had snippets of the conversation, real or imagined, in the house. One said this, and one said this, and one said this. We're going back and forth. You don't have to pass the shaylan. P.S. Rav Moshe has a couple of questions back and forth. They have written on the paper. And the end of the Rav Moshe was matarit. The operation was done. Basically, what did Rav Moshe say? Baby A, who can't survive anyway, is a roide from baby B. Rav Moshe l'shitoso. Because Rav Moshe holds, you can be a rodef without kavana to be rodef. You're a rodef anyway. Without, is there a Moshe l'shitoso? The Moshe was consistent. His opinion expressed in that case is consistent with his opinion expressed over here in the Tshuva. Yes?
Isn't the Lashon
Derabanan
that it's a natural process? It's not so much that you have kavana, but more the
right? Right. That's arguable. Even on his lower level, he has some kind of a kavana to kill somebody. Even if he's certifiably insane, but Afal Pikein, he also saw on TV "Bang Bang, You're Dead." So that's also some kind of a level of kavana. But Kitz and Nimritz, in my view, that's a very questionable assumption. I told you in this case. I told you in that case. Yeah. So one could argue, we spoke about this last year when we were in Subis, one could argue that baby A is not a bar kayama, because baby A cannot live, maybe viewed as some kind of a trefa. Baby B, though, that can live forever, is not a trefa. And therefore, one could argue, again, this is a chiddush nifla, but one could argue, based upon a Meiri, on this daf in Sanhedrin, where the Meiri says that although there is a principle, who is the next Daf in Sanhedrin? The Ayin Dalet. It's one of the somewhere in the sugya. But the Miri says, although you may not kill someone to save someone else's life, because of my chazan, the famous Gemara, the dame didach sumak tvei, who says your blood is redder than their blood. The Miri implies that if the enemy surrounds a group of people and says, "Give us one of you," you may not give anybody. Right? You may not give. Give us one, we'll kill all you. Still can't give anybody. Give us one of you who is a trefa. The Nevi suggests in Sanhedrin you can give him. Because he cannot apply the principle of my chazas. He's a trefa. The Michas Chinuch talked about that as well. Michas Chinuch. This is not for now to discuss. It's not the topic for today's shiur. But part of the brain death controversy that you probably are familiar with included this kind of a situation. The question was, if someone is brain dead, may you, what they call, harvest an organ from a brain dead person in order to save a person who can live forever. So if your old brain dead is dead, there's no problem. But if brain dead is not dead, the chorus is absolutely awesome. Not so posh that it's awesome. It's arguable, again, I'm just saying it's true. It's arguable that the brain dead patient is a trefer, given what's happening. He had a car accident, he can't survive. No way he can live out the year, he had trauma, no way. But he can live long enough that he can harvest the organs to save someone else who's a shalom, who could live another 50 years. It's arguable that the Maichazit's principle would not apply, not only in a case where you're giving somebody over, as the case of the Miri, and maybe even the Minchas Chinuch, maybe even in this extreme case. It's arguable. I'm not saying I'm not getting any psak over here. Your argument is very well taken. You know who says like you? Rish Lakish says like you. Rish Lakish says that if they say, "Give us one of you, we'll kill all of you," give them the one. You hold like Rish Lakish, mamish. It's beautiful. Rav Yochanan's against you, and Rav like Rav Yochanan. So I'm going to tell you. That's a very good argument you're making, but Rav Yochanan rejects it. Rav holds like Rav Yochanan.
It's not exactly the same, because there you could argue that they might not carry out their threat. I mean, there's more of a
Look, I'm aware. Every case is somewhat different. It's somewhat different. Okay. Now, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I don't see it offhand. I'm not here to come criticize someone who did something and they're a poskim who will make a lot. I'm saying according to my logic, it shouldn't be mut. Okay. Yes.
How far do you think this cure road is far out? And it seems certainly in the case of this particular hot baby that this baby is almost like the eight month old baby that the Gemara refers to, that if you did a brit on it, it would be like cutting a piece of meat. So that seems like a dead weight there that you could just chop off anyway.
Whoa, slow. Moshe was makil in that kind of a situation because Rav Moshe viewed baby A as a rodent. If you hope, but if baby A is not a rodent,
no, but the Rambam's for kibbutz.
Right. According to what we suggested, if you take option on the Rambam, that in order to be a real rodent, you have to have kavanah lirdof, and this baby is not kavanah lirdof. It's only you might. Yeah, I agree with you. This baby can be categorized as kirodev, but if you recall, kirodev is not matir minisim v'ticha. Kirodev was only matir throwing a piano off the boat, eliminating a fetus that's not considered to be a nefesh. But this two chamber hard baby has already been born. The only possible way is to go with that meiri min chaschinuch. Although it's been born, nonetheless it's a treifa, and as a treifa. It's again arguable. There's no real Issur Ritzicha. Not only is there no capital punishment, maybe it's not even Ritzicha at all. That's a Chiddush. There's no Issur Ritzicha by a Treva. Not so Poshut. If you don't want to accept that in that definition, you have to say that even though there is an Issur Ritzicha, but it's not as much of a life as somebody else. Normally we cannot make such distinctions. You can't say, well, he's a big Talmud Chacham. This one is retarded. We make no distinctions. Poshut is no distinctions. Yeah, you know, if some make a distinction, it's very dangerous. But that's only where the person is a bar chius to the extent that if you kill them, it's a capital offense. You kill a child, it's a capital offense. You kill a retarded person, it's a capital offense. But if you kill someone who was injured and cannot survive a year, it's not a capital offense. We only have to draw it on very objective-eyed lines. You can't just draw it, otherwise it's impossible. That's my only best I can answer your question. Okay, Rabos. Let's not go after this pilpul. Let's get to some more practical, tentative conclusions. What to do? So my first comment, I'm making it again. I mentioned it last week, but I got to say it again. Our first move has to be to have a very, very powerful protest against people who just do abortions for no sufficient cause. You know, the government laws have an impact on Klal Yisrael as well. Don't think for a minute that we're not affected by the sense of the street. Some of us here are old enough to remember when abortion was illegal. It had its own problems. They used to call it the back alley abortions. That's what they used to call them. The back alley abortions that were doing with hangers, and it was just crazy. It was so dangerous. That's the downside of when abortion was illegal. On the other hand, having abortion becoming legalized leads to people doing it with impunity. Why not? It's 100% legal. There's nothing wrong with it. And that attitude has filtered in, unfortunately, into our tzibur of Shomer Mitzvah, Shomer Shabbos. I'll tell you one story. I think the story is approximately 20 years old. I think it's about 20 years old. Between 20 and 25 years old, that's my guess. I got a call from someone who was a classmate of mine. Hadn't seen him in a long time. If I'm not mistaken, he's a classmate of mine for many years, and I believe he even got smicha from my yeshiva, I believe. And he asked me, what's the end of an abortion before 40 days? When it comes to this 40 days, we'll get to it. I read to him about 40 days, the Gemara says, Masechta Yevamah, so you want to learn this guy. It's only called Maya Ba'almo, that it's considered near water before 40 days, because before 40 days, there's no formation, I should say, of the limbs. And that's true that you can get from a radiologist and give you, or probably OBGYN as well, the pictures, when they have sonograms, pictures of the baby at every day, mamish, every day of the 270 days of gestation. It looks this way, this way, this way, all the way. Every 10 days, they'll give you an update. Till 40 days, there's almost no formation of limbs. And the Gemara therefore called it Maya Ba'alma. It doesn't mean it means water, then Chazal, I don't know what they were talking about. But remember, there were spontaneous abortions, or we call them miscarriages, in years gone by as well. And it's the Sugyas in the Gemara. Remember that they looked over the pit and they saw the Nefel, was Tomei, not Tomei. So the Chazal had very good statistics on what, and they were able to figure out from the mikveh how long she's pregnant. So they had a 40-day fetus which was cast, which is miscarried by a woman, and they saw, Maya Ba'alma. Once above 40 days, then it's already tricky. Doesn't mean that above 40 days is automatically considered a hapala for all halacha considerations. Less than 40 days, it's nothing. Above 40 days, you got to look. Where's this quoted? It's quoted in the Pesukei Tshuva in Hilchos Pidyon HaBen. In Hilchos Pidyon HaBen, you may know that if a woman carried a baby for more than 40 days and miscarried, and then she has a viable, healthy child, a boy, which is her first child, it's a child whether it needs a pidyon haben. Less than 40 days, you certainly would need a pidyon haben, but that doesn't count. Above 40 days, the Pesukei Tshuva says you have to look and see if, quote, nisrakmu evarov, were limbs formed. Don't know. I think the limbs usually are formed shortly after the 40-day mark, but there's a big but that we know about in today's world. Was the baby viable up until the moment that it was miscarried? Today, often people go to a doctor with all the very, very modern technology, the sonogram, etc., and they say, lady, I'm sorry to tell you that the baby is not viable. So the woman starts to cry. Lady, what are you crying for? It's already 2 weeks it's not viable. You just didn't know about it until today. And they can document it because they have exactly the size of the head, the size of last time, this time, and they give you exact. So he calls me up with this question. So my first response was, there must be something terribly wrong. Maybe there was a Tay-Sachs. You know, they did that. Or maybe, I don't know what. I just didn't know what to think of it. What happened over here? He says, no, there's nothing wrong with the child. The child, for all we know, is a perfectly healthy child. So that had, maybe he just can't afford it. You know, people, Anias Mavira Esa Odom Aldato Valdas Kono. Poverty can take a person and make him think of things which he shouldn't be thinking. So maybe I was a volunteer to maybe raise some funds to help them over this difficulty in their lives. No, that's not it either. He had a good job. I believe he worked in a hospital. I don't think he was a physician, but he had some kind of a job. I might have been in a hospital. So paid her, pay salaries, Not something different. But what is it? Well, my wife and I, we had decided we're only going to have 2 children. So she doesn't want to have any more than 2 children. And after we had 2 children, Baruch Hashem, so they practiced contraception. But, as he put it, we had an accident. An accident. And his wife is pregnant now. She's a month pregnant, and she's pregnant. And she doesn't want to have more than 2 children. Kacha. I don't know what to say. I said, who's going to... I don't really know any head for this. But, I think I'm not articulate enough. So I tried to get one of the most articulate rabbis in the city to speak to the family, a very articulate rabbi from a modern Orthodox congregation in Manhattan at the time, very, very articulate. And I think he got nowhere. Then I saw, I'll get a woman. So I got a Rebbetzin, also very articulate, knows how to speak. Apparently also got nowhere. Nope. I got a call from this young man about 2 weeks later, to ready now, color kids, all the deadlines passed on the 40 days, passed 40 days, 41, 40, 45, 50, whatever. We're going to keep the baby. 7 months later, I got a call. Modeled up as a boy. Pretty sure it was a boy. So then conversation, oh, very nice. I should have nachas. What happened? Like, you know, listen to this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has many shluchim in the world. This woman was a conflicted woman. You know, she also understood that there's not such a simple matter. So after hearing what I said indirectly, I only spoke to her husband. Apparently the rabbi spoke to her and the rabbi, this other rabbi. Nothing really moved her. There was a non-Jewish scientist in this my classmate's chemistry lab or some kind of lab in the hospital. I believe she even said, or he's even told me, it was a what they call today African American, a black non-Jewish scientist, and he talked about it. Harbei shluchim lamokom. You know, he's saying it's not right, science, this. I don't know what he used. He talked about it. What am I trying to bring out by this? Had abortion been illegal, I don't think it's what we call in our language, this havamina, would ever arisen. That's what I think. But because it became so accepted, you go to the, they get a vaccine, so you get an abortion. You know, it almost became the same league. So we have our first statement must be that abortion is asur min haTorah, for whatever reason. Some say reticha, some say chavala, other reasons, but it's an isur min daoraisa. It's a very serious isur of chavala, maybe even consider what we call like a gram reticha. And I want to go further than that. They'll say it's for medical reasons. You have to abort the baby for medical reasons. Right away, every rabbi pulls back. Medical reasons. That's what are the medical reasons? You have to ask questions. You know, if you're asked to shout out the Rav, you don't just become a pussycat. As soon as they say medical reasons, what are the medical reasons? You have the Tzitz Eliezer over here, Abosai. Tzitz Eliezer. And the Tshuva and the Hilchos Rov from the Rufu. A few of the Tshuvas here of the author of the Tzitz Eliezer. What page is it? I don't know.
It starts on 37.
Okay, so I'm 37. 40. It's at the very end. There's a Sikkum. It's a very beautiful Tshuva, but let's see what the Sikkum is. Here we are. This should be on page 44, I believe. Let's see a sikkum. It's mind-boggling sikkum. Okay. Here's Aleph and Beis, Poshut Gimel. Sheish Tzorech Vadinos and Shabutu Lassad Isha Apollo. It's the hadith of Atzelos like they wrote for Israel, a Jewish doctor, not a non. Why? Who was here last week? Why? For a non-Jewish doctor, we said that Apollo is Reticha. Okay. Tess, Shenishkefes Sakana Leishah B'Hamshachas Ha'irayon. I agree. Yud. Sham shemata v'yusah shalo ha'isha rofeif ma'od. U'l'shem v'fuwaso ha'shkatas mach oveh ha'gdolim. Dorish levatzeh ha'polas uber. Af al pishen sakana ma'mashis. Kam kein eish mokom lahat el asos zos. U'chviroos eine ha'mora ha'matah shalofonam. What does that mean? I just don't know what it means. Look at Yudalef. Keinesh lahatir kaniska b'ksheisha menekes. She's nursing. That's sufficient reason to permit an abortion? That the mother is nursing and she became pregnant while she's nursing? What? Am I babbling? I can't understand this. I can't understand it. The Gemara has in Sumas, Yevamas, Shalosh Nashim Mishamshus B'moch, and one of them was meinekes for fear that she'll conceive and the milk will dry up and the baby's going to die from malnutrition. That's before formula and before there was enough cow's milk, healthy cow's milk to go around. Come on. We all know that a very significant percentage of women don't nurse their babies even when they're perfectly healthy and not expecting it. What's going on? This is pikuach nefesh. I'm close to it. I don't understand. So again, I'm just showing you how far things can go. It seems to me it's going much too far. Lefi ani hazdaiti. I just don't understand. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, I think there is another hand. But the other hand, in my view, is limited to cases in which the fetus is not a healthy fetus. It's not a healthy fetus. We'll take the extreme case. Tay-Sachs. We read last week from Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe says, makes no difference. Who cares Tay-Sachs? You can't, because according to Rav Moshe, abortion is murder. So you can't kill a Tay-Sachs fetus. You have no basis. There's no heto shavolo according to Rav Moshe. That's Rav Moshe's position. That is certainly a clearly formulated position of Rav Moshe, and that's it. That's what he says. Nothing. However, I would like to say that according to the alternative formulation of last week, namely that abortion is an Issa d'oraisa. Yes, it is an Issa d'oraisa, but it's only an Issa d'oraisa of chavala. And I mentioned to you last week, whenever we talk about chavala, we must measure two things: the level of chavala, how serious of a chavala it is, and the what we'll call the benefit of the chavala. What legitimate, from the halachic perspective, gain is there from doing the chavala? We spoke last time about some of these cosmetic surgeries. Not so posh to be matter cosmetic surgeries, because you know, it's a significant surgeries, and there's even certain risk. They tell me that there are all kinds of crazy things now, what is called liposuction. You know, the woman wants to feel a little bit skinnier, you know, to fit into the American craze that everyone has to be skinny as a rail. Such a craze. And the Gemara is, it's good to be fat. You know, the Gemara said so. Because in the time of the Gemara, there was not that much food to go around. The fat of the woman, she had, you know, a little extra reserve, and she lived longer. So it was good for the woman to be fat. Today, it's reached a point where there's so much eating disorder. It's based on Hollywood. They have to look skinny. It's pachat pechod. Pachat pechod. All right? So you want a diet as long as it's healthy. Fine. I'm in favor of all healthy diets. I'm in favor of all healthy diets. I've spoken about it from the pulpit in my shul. I see a lot of things in my shul, including this. I said, if you're obese, if you're overweight, it's against halacha, because you're shortening your lifespan according to raw statistics. If you're a certain amount of pounds over what they call the ideal body weight, there's all kinds of new indexes, BMI, or whatever they have the thing, you are, according to statistics, there's a more than 50% chance, unless I'm serious, that you're going to die earlier than otherwise. My view, if it's over a 50% chance that you're going to die earlier than otherwise, you don't say Shalom Shalom Hashem. That's why my view is also to smoke. Even though, well, what's wrong? Shalom Shalom Hashem. That's true. The Gemara, as a matter of fact, in our case, Paskins, that Shalosh Nashim need not be Mishamash Vimoch. So to say, may not, so they need not. Why? Shalom Shalom Hashem. The chance of someone dying as a result of your, you're going to have come pregnant and the baby's going to die from malnutrition, it's too small of a chance. And everyone does it. That's a minig ha'olam, Shalom Shalom Hashem. Not if it's a majority that it can lead to a shortening of your life. That's why my view, smoking is also, and being obese, I think, is also some of the same reasons. I've made very repeated and powerful pleas about the things in shul. And you know, we wear some people down after a while. So we get some people stop smoking, Baruch Hashem, and some people are losing some weight. Okay. But, the question then becomes, how far do you go with all these things? Take liposuction? People have died from liposuction. You know, I mean, it's primarily cosmetic. Could be many times it's exclusively cosmetic. The woman has a normal, she's in within the norm every year, but you know, she can't show off her body, whatever it is. I hold it's mamash aser. It's taking a chance. These things are sometimes dangerous. So we always have to weigh what's the benefit and what's the risk. All the nose jobs that are now becoming very popular. You know? So I think it's a serious shaila again in the halacha. Some poskim make it if a girl can't find a shidduch. And it's really, it says in the Gemara, Benosis for all the Yafa saying, but everyone has an exception. So the exception can be corrected by fairly standard surgery. I can see. But because she's married already, and her husband loves her. So what do you need this for? Rabbeinu Shalom, I don't understand. I don't measure the benefit against the, I said it's considered relatively minor. Frankly, there's a discussion about piercing the ears. I resisted my daughters to pierce their ears because I thought it's chavala shelo letzorach. This is very small. It's a fairly nothing. Although one of my daughters at the end did it. We'll get to the story soon. And got a little bit complicated because, you know, they put in. I'm sorry? Right. It's one of the rides that they had. They may have had it, right? There's a famous story about Rav Shlomo Zalman about it. Anyone know the story? Rav Baran. Very famous story. Rav Baran, he printed it in his Hesper of Shlomo Zalman, if I'm not mistaken. Rav Baran had the same fight as I had with his daughter. I was on Rav Baran's side. That you can't do it. It's Chavola, Shalom Tzarek. See, his daughter said, well, Abba, what are you making chumras, brisket chumras? So they said, we'll go to Rav Shlomo Zalman. Whatever he says goes. So Rav Baran, right, I'm pretty sure I think from what everybody wrote. As soon as he walked in with his daughter, right away, Shlomo Zalman is making nice to his daughter. Rav Baran gives him the cold shoulder. Ma'inyan, what is it? So she explains, or he explains, that, you know, my daughter wants to have her ears pierced, and I think it's a serious halacha question of chavola shalot tzorach. So Shlomo Zalman answers, and Rav Baran writes, no, on the contrary, it's a very good thing, and in my family there's a minig that before the bas mitzvah, the women have the girls have the ears pierced, the baron is this. And then again, he makes nice to the daughter, and her baron. He was trying to show her Shlomo Zalman, you know, not just how he passed in the Shaila, but how he was been on the Chavero that I mentioned. But Moses thinking, I assume Rabbi Shlomo Zalman felt that you have to measure what's the nature of the Chavala. It's such a minimalist procedure, it's nothing. They put a little poop together, it's nothing. And such a small chavala that even the fairly small benefit of having you have earrings fit in, and you have earrings without pierced ears, as you know, but we won't go into that right now. That small gain suffices to be matter that even smaller risk or chavala, etc. That seems to have been Rav Shlomo Zalman's opinion. So as a result of that, all my children had their ears pierced, all my girls. Thank you very much for correcting me today. Be careful what you say. My daughters had their ears pierced, and kaka psak megadol ador. Okay, even I held like a baron, tell you the truth, but psak megadol ador. But what kind of an abortion? Where does abortion fit in on the level of Chavalah? Is it a serious Chavalah? Is it a not so serious Chavalah? What's the gain from this Chavalah? Here's my take in brief. To do Chavalah on a healthy fetus that could grow into a healthy human being, a healthy Jew, a Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, a Nachas to the family, and for whatever reason that's bothering you right now, you want to snuff out that life. In my view, it's a chavala, which is the most serious isa chavala imaginable. It's not like piercing an ear. It's worse than chopping off a finger. Rahman al-Islam. It's a very, very serious chavala. And the gain? What can the gain be already? You decide you didn't want to have three children, you want to have two. Well, what kind of game is that? You, it's going to cost you too much money. Yeah, it costs now $30,000 to come to this school here, so so again, you'll get the loans like everybody else. You can't measure these things. There's no gain. I can't think of any gain that's so significant that could outweigh that chavala in that kind of case. Let's go to the other extreme. Tesets. In my view, the equation flips on both ends. On both ends it flips. On the one hand, you say, oi, how can you allow this abortion? Abortion, you're snuffing out a life. After all, so much potential in this life, a life of Torah, mitzvahs, what? Nebuch. If you know the facts about Tesets, the baby can't live too long, and the short life that it has, it's only in misery itself, and the parents are probably in worse misery. It's terrible. It's mamish, it's a rachmanis. It's the worst rachmanis on the baby and on the family. It's a terrible rachmanis. So for that reason, it seems to me that terminating a pregnancy of a Tay-Sachs baby, it's not a chavod. Look what you're doing. It's a terrible, terrible thing. No, on the contrary. What you're taking out is never a life doomed to only the tzaris. A short life to the tzaris. That's on the one hand. So on the one hand, from the perspective of what the magnitude of the chavala is significantly less. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, the need, what we call the gain, is so much more legitimate, you're sparing the pain of the child itself and sparing the pain of the parents. So to my mind, it's the other way around. It's from one extreme to the other. The healthy fetus, it's the most serious chavala for almost no reason, nothing legitimate. The Tay-Sachs baby, it's a much more limited chavala, because the baby comes to term, it's not going to get too far past that, nebuch. And at the same time, the need there is what could be construed as a legitimate need. So for these reasons, it seems to me that even if you'll be matter taking a Tay-Sachs baby out, which is what the Tzitz Eliezer says it's permissible to perform an abortion on a Tay-Sachs baby, it's somewhere in this lengthy, I can't find it right now in the summation, but it's in here somewhere. It seems to me that psak makes sense, again, if you assume the concept which we developed, which we based upon many sources, that it's not Ritzicha, it's a Chavala. Again, if it's Ritzicha, Rabbi Tzvi Moshe wrote, there's no Hetter whatsoever. Yes? Is a baby a Trefa? I don't think so. A Trefa is a human being that cannot live for more than 12 months. Tay-Sachs babies typically live more than 12 months. I don't think it's right to call a Tay-Sachs baby a Trefa. A Trefa, we have to be very... You can't throw words around because it feels good. These are very specific and circumscribed objective criteria. Yeah?
What about in a case where on a rape, either for a single girl or for a married girl?
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, in the case of Rachmana Litzlan, a woman is attacked, and she may be pregnant. She does. She knows she's pregnant. You know. So first of all, first things first. There's a thing called a morning after pill, which I'm sure you know about. Right? It's in all the papers now. Is it legal or is it not legal in America yet? Yes. No. Yes. It doesn't answer my question. And while they were imported from France for many years, it was legalized in France. Now, doing that, it seems to me, that is the most cal form of abortion, because it really, the morning after pill, what it really does is, if I'm not mistaken, it really prevents implantation in the first place. So you have this zera floating around in the uterus, and the morning after pill, it does not allow the few little mini cells that, or this few little, to implant. In my opinion, that procedure is mutter in such a case. I wouldn't wait. Someone comes to you and says, this is what happened last night, quickly get the pill and take it. That's what I would say. That's a much more lenient form than waiting around for 2 months and suddenly waking up, war gewalt. Yes? Very good. The Tzitz Eliezer originally has a discussion. Of course, 40 days is one cutoff. And then he adds in the old Sfid Gimel there, call them Gimel Chadoshim, who killed Behar Be'im in the side of the Yachamikain. He says it's much more kal the first trimester. That's a legalistic term, first trimester. I don't really know where he gets it from. Someone wrote him a letter, if I'm not mistaken. The source you said even is matter even until the second trimester. So he said his next talk says, oh, you're right. It's mutter the first two trimesters, just like that. In my view, the only legitimate cutoff point is 40 days, which we know, that's basically the Gemara. And the next cutoff is only one cutoff that I know about, and that is the earliest point that a baby could be viable. And that has gone down dramatically in the last 25 years. It used to be that before 6 months, the baby was not viable. It just couldn't survive. Now, they're taking babies that are less than 1 pound, and they keep them. This is where the flows. That's about the halfway point, that's approximately the halfway point of a pregnancy. Approximately, of course it depends on any doctors here? It's approximately the halfway point of pregnancy. That's the whole fight now with what they call partial birth abortions. How can you do one abortion? You're doing an abortion, and in the next room, they're taking exactly the same baby, the same size, and trying to do moving mountains to save the baby. What's going on over here? Call it murder. That's the whole fight, as you know, went on in still going on, I think, with this issue. So that's the next cutoff point. And the baby could potentially be viable. Yes?
Getting back to the rape question, there's sometimes when people don't, because of embarrassment, they may not report it. So what if they find out in the morning after, if it's known, whatever?
Correct. You're right. It's a good question. The woman's not going to report. She's embarrassed. She thinks, okay, it happened. Won't tell anybody. I'll just put it out of my mind the Gemara. That's until she starts feeling morning sickness. She said, wait a minute here. This is not good. So I better report it now, and then now it could either be within 40 days or beyond 40 days, etc. What do you do then? That's a very good question. Here on the one hand, what I thought were two extremes for a reason. One extreme was you're taking a perfectly healthy baby, killing it for really no reason, a chutzpah, just because you want to have a third child. That's ridiculous. The other extreme was if you're eliminating a baby that never has Tay-Sachs. All right, so the chaval is less and the need is greater because after all, the parents go through and even the child goes through. This case, of the woman who's attacked, it's neither extreme. On the one hand, the baby's going to be a perfectly healthy baby. All right, you may not like the genes. The baby could be, who knows, what ethnic appearance the baby will have depending on the attacker. Rachmona litzlan. On the other hand, the baby could be a shomer mitzvah, and on the other hand, the mother is not her fault. She's in this bad situation. That's where you get slippery. That's a very tricky question. My offhand psak in this case is within the first 40 days it's mutter, because that's a tzorach gadol ma'od for the poor girl, whether single or married. Either way, tzorach gadol ma'od. On the other hand, beyond 40 days, you have to have someone bigger than me. You have to have someone who's willing to give a head to, which I'm not so quick to give. Yes?
Would there be any allowance? I don't think there will be, but in the first 40 days, if there's a divorce, it's a Jewish couple, and they get divorced right away, she's pregnant in the first
40 days. That's much more difficult. That's not the same. That's certainly not the same. There was a famous story in Eretz Yisrael that this reminds you of. There was a famous story. A woman had a baby, and this baby grew up to be a big time chacham, I think in Yerushalayim. I think it was an American family. Yerushalayim, and it was a big time chacham and a big yeshiva. And they read a shidduch, so it was a big family. Whoops, the whole thing. And it's fine and dandy. Only one problem happened. He got married. And they had a baby, and the baby was black. See, right away he said, said to his wife, Gvalt, what's going on over here? What happened over here? But it turned out that the cold joke was on him. What they found out afterwards, he went to his mother, and his mother said, he was a Ben Yochid. And, okay, a lot of Ben Yochid around in this world. What turned out was, apparently, his father couldn't have children, father, whatever he called his father. She was once attacked. She thought nothing of it. She thought, she was attacked, by a black person. Turned out, the child was from that attack, not from her own husband. She never, and it never occurred to her. It never occurred to him. But he was completely white. You know how it is, this is going. But how's that for a story? They say the story is really true. I mean, you know, I haven't met the guy who it happened to, but I don't know. On both sides. Let's go to the other very complicated question.
What about one thing about
sorry.
Question.
Sure.
What about medical? What about illnesses other than
say? Oh, that's what I want to talk about. I don't know. Now, slowly. Slowly. There are many other potential problems with children which are not the same as Tesach. And the Post can talk about these things in this context. I'll give you the most common that's discussed today. Down syndrome. The most common that's talked about today. These days you can tell with a sonogram, with amniocentesis, you can tell. Now, you know, people's attitude towards Down syndrome children are diverge as radically as day and night. As mummish as day and night. Some say, Mayridik, terrific, you know, it's a Heilig and the Shama. The Chazdish would stand up for these people. So it says in Svarim, he stood up for people because he saw that they were not Heilig and the Shama. Those who've been involved with them, they're very often very lovable and they're very kind and they're inspirational. You know, in Camp Marasha, they started this Yachad program for the developmentally disabled. Whatever help they've done for these children and their parents, which is considerable, in my view, has done them a greater service to the whole community. You know, gosh, tough kids, you know, to tell you, tough kids. But really, those kids from jaded and sometimes very wealthy, and they never, you know, there's this. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. It takes Nebuch, our Rachmanis, but it takes the interaction with these kinds of children to help purify their own neshamas. So, you know, you take that attitude. How are you going to say, mutative to a border down syndrome child. What are you talking about? It's on the one hand. On the other hand, there are parents that say, I can't handle it. I can't handle it. It's an old, it's a constant burden, it's a constant thing. You're not going to have the nachas of my son, the doctor, or whatever other variant. You know, and what's going to happen when you become 80 and he's become 60, who's going to take care of him? So there's some parents that just can't handle it. So what do you do? So there are various approaches to this. There's a very interesting psak from a distinguished rabbi in Israel named Rabbi Shlomo Aviner. You may have heard of a very famous rabbi. He's the rabbi of Bet El. Terat Kohanim is his yeshiva. I have a copy in my house. It was put out in the weekly organ newspaper, bulletin of the Bet El community some years back, quite a few years ago. If you know the Bet El community, which we'll call for the lack of a better term, it's the Merkaz Arav community. We used to be called the Gush Emunim community. That's what it is. There's a lot, Yesh has a lot of these, Yerushalayim as well. Everyone knows what I'm talking about, Merkaz Arav, you know what that stands for? It stands for, among other things, as many children as you're going to have. That's one of the hallmarks, Baruch Hashem, of the Merkaz community. What happened was, women would stop having children age 35. Stop. Now you and I know that although there is early menopause, or even if not menopause proper, there's early infertility at age 35. It's a fairly common syndrome, but you know, still a small percentage. I mean, again, I'm not a physician, but the average woman is probably fertile till age 40, and there's some fertile way beyond. Look at the chassidim. I don't feel any further. They don't have any. There was once a, I believe, a cabinet secretary. I believe his name was Udall, U-D-A-L-L. There were two brothers. They're both with him. One of them was a 16th child, I believe, in a Mormon family, if I'm not mistaken. And they asked him to intervene on the side of abortion or contraception. What are you, crazy? He said, what are you, out of your mind? You know, so I can say the same thing about myself. My mother, Aleha Shalom, was a 10th child, aside from a number of abortions and maybe infant deaths, and was born when my grandmother, Aleha Shalom, was well into her 40s, a number of years after her next youngest brother, or it was a few years before her. So he asked me to come out against women having children in their 40s. He got the wrong guy. But that's what's happened. And you know why? In fact, he did a little research, the rabbi. They were afraid of Downs. They were afraid of Downs. Because if you notice statistics of Downs, it becomes much more common, not only when you get older, which is certainly a very significant factor, but as a doctor, as a personal friend of mine, his name is Dr. Schimmel. He works in the neonatal unit of Shari Tzedek. He did a fellowship a few years in Columbia, and he lived next door to me, so we became very friendly. We're still friendly. He published an article in, I believe it's either JAMA or one of the prestigious medical journals, in which he links Downs, and there's no one better than Shari Tzedek to be able to do this study, not only to age, but to what he calls grand multiparity. Anybody?
Lots of babies.
Yeah, that's right. If you ever go into a labor room, they wonder why you are. Para, you are multi-para, you've had birth before, and grand, I think above 6 children, if I'm not mistaken, that's called a grand multi-para. That's, you know, and that's exactly what happens in these Haredi family, whether they be Haredi Hasidi or what they call Chardal in Americas, and they're having, unfortunately, many, it's a relative term, still a fairly small number, but a considerable number of Downs. So Hasidim don't have any chachmas, what are you going to do? You know, they grin and bear it. But the America's dicks, they're a little bit more worldly, and they just stopped having children at age 35. Gamarnu. So it bothered this rabbi. So what are the statistics of Downs? In the general population, it's one in some four-figure sum. I don't know what it is. And when you're above the age of 35, 40, it's just one in 200. I mean, we play Russian roulette. No one wants to do that, but that's kind of stat, but still a very low percentage. There's a mute, a very, very small mute. But that's it. Everyone, you know, there are 200 babies in everyone's range, and you know one or two of them, and that's it. That's it. Quit. I'm not going to. So he wrote in this piece of paper, this is Alon Lepetel, that's false. We should encourage our widow women to have children as long as HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them the ability to have to bear children. They should be bearing children. It's a big mitzvah, the Erev Tanach Yadecha. There are those women who are afraid of Downs. He's very, if you know his style, he's very dugri. He was right to the point. Afraid of Downs. So I advocate they should do amniocentesis. Finished. That has a risk of losing the baby too, but it's a small risk. Everyone should do amniocentesis. No, and then what? And then what? See, it's very coy. And then we'll have to decide a case by case basis. Some women will have good counseling, and some women may agree to have such a baby, and some women may say, look, I just can't handle it. It's absolutely impossible for me to take care of this. I can't do it for shum pun of often after all the counseling and all of this and all that and the other thing. And then, Avinah writes, look, if we have such a situation with consultation with the Rabbanim, I guess he means Rabbi Waldenberg, so we'll give them in a way that they can... they can overcome the situation. You know, it talks a little bit in little vagaries. That's his. And what happened? Here's the punchline. What happened, therefore, was all of a sudden in Bethel, there were many, many more children born to these older women. Tremendous upsurge in the fertility of the women over the age of 35. Undoubtedly, there's no question in my mind that there were some abortions. Can't say how many. Had to be. Some Downs babies, too. Had to be. And he felt that that's an appropriate position to take. And frankly, I have sympathy for that position because, again, where I'm coming from, the murder view, but the chavala view. When you talk about chavala, you got to talk about it to the bigger picture. You know, if the result of being strict and saying a Down syndrome baby is very lovable and can have a positive impact on the family and the community, but as a result of that unalterable stance. What's happening? There's thousands of less babies born to Klal Yisrael. Hey, that's also a consideration. You know, I'm not giving any formal psak over here, but that is something which it should be taken into account. Yes?
Is there any difference if the parents are fully functioning parents? Because in Yachad, I know they couple up the Yachad members a lot of times.
Oh, that's a whole different story. If there is a couple that are you know, quite we'll call them developmentally disabled or some other way, the point that their children are likely to genetically to be significantly disabled in the matter of their parents. That's it often happens in the case of developmentally disabled cases. That's a very serious issue. In my view, I really believe completely they should be coupled up, but I also believe there should be contraception. Now, that's also not so simple to do, and I hear the methods, the various methods, which we don't want to talk about as it goes beyond this shiur. Some methods I believe should be used, a permissible method, which could be managed by such a couple. That's my take on the situation.
It's
a very difficult case. It's very difficult. Very, very difficult. Very difficult. Again, let's talk about, let's get nitty gritty. What's the violation that the mother violates if her baby is aborted? That's first answer. The answer is nothing. What did she do? She didn't do anything. She didn't do the abortion. Who did the violation? Who? The doctor. She'll say, all right, but the mother is in violation of what? You're causing the doctor to do this abortion, which the halacha views as impermissible. Here's my main point. If some poskim say that it is permissible, well, you have certain people, there are poskim out there. Rabbi Waldenberg himself is quite liberal in this manner. In America, I guess his main follower in America is a man named Rabbi David Cohen, who lives in Flatbush, who apparently embraces this position as well. So there are chashim or rabbanim who have this position that they're, these kinds of babies that are not healthy, they're lenient to do abortions. So even if someone asks me, may I or may I not? I say, listen, I can't answer you because after all, it's a machloikis or a merch is against and it's not. But the woman, what's she doing? Lift naive? Not necessarily. Because let's say I give you food, which I wouldn't eat myself, because it's not Chol of Yisrael, for argument's sake. I wouldn't eat it. Someone gives me a candy bar for Purim, not Chol of Yisrael, and I wouldn't eat it. So I give it to you. Is that lift naive? You wouldn't eat it otherwise. I gave you this candy bar. What do you say, yes or no? The person will say no, because you're following Rabbi Moshe's truth. It happens to your Rabbi Moshe another way this time. Rabbi Moshe says that Chol of Yisrael is not really required in America. It's really, our milk is Chol of Yisrael because government inspection, the chulin. No, if they eat it. So here too, if the Tzitz Eliezer allows it, and the doctor does it, I'll just lift Naiva because I'm just giving you a maramok of that. There's a big Talmud Chacham who allows it. And I want to tell you, I've gotten many shilas about these things in the past. I always try to refer them out, and I refer people to go to Rabbi Waldenberg because he's Sheikh Yarich Yomim Tovim, the Kabbal Panei Mashiach Tzitkenu. He's a man of, I think when I was over 90, and he doesn't like being used. He only asked me abortion shilas. He doesn't like that. I can't blame him. He wrote 20-something svarim. He only asked me about abortions. But nonetheless, I'll send some sort of double call. He's closer. I feel that it is justified, at least to the point that the doctor who's doing it has a basis to rely upon. And therefore, the woman who insists on it, at the same time, I must tell you the truth, if someone calls me up and I say, I'm carrying a Down's baby, I don't push him to do abortions. To the contrary. My personal bias is, if the mother can handle it, that these are the Halig and the Shamas. I had a case, a Talmud of mine, calls me up. I believe at the time that he called me, he was still in his 20s. I think his wife was certainly still in her 20s. That, they're carrying a Down's baby. What to do? Still fairly early. What to do? I think it was beyond 40 days. In America today, they don't do amniocentesis. Amniocentesis can't be done until 16 weeks. There was a method, which is still used in some places, it's called chorionic villi sampling, CVI. Can be done at a very early stage. For a while, it was being done at a very early stage, until they found out that in the wrong hands, it clipped off limbs. People were born without fingers, without arms, because it's very, very, very small. Like one mistake of a millimeter, and boom, they stopped doing it so early. For a while, they were doing it as early as 40 days, 40 days after the conception. And that was, to me, when I thought it was medically sound, that was to me a godsend. I remember, this is a personal story, when my children were very young, and Rav Shech the Shlita had also very young children, we went to the same pediatrician. His name is Dr. Donald Gribbets. I saw him recently. He's a very wonderful man. He was for many years a pediatrician. Maybe he was your pediatrician maybe in Manhattan, in Mount Sinai. So he also was in Mount Sinai Hospital. Wonderful man. Lived in Riverdale for many years. He lives in Manhattan now. So he would cry to us. We got together a few times with our little babies. What am I going to do, he says. This is the mid-70s, we'll say. What am I going to do? People contact from Williamsburg. He's a pediatrician with an international reputation. With all these taste tests, because I can't take it, he said. I can't take it. Before Darius Sharim had really established itself. So there was still... Can't we find a way to do abortions for heterans? Taste tests, children, after all. So we both said to him, listen, find a way to do it within less than 40 days. And then we can talk. It's not much... So it turned out a few years later they were doing these things, CVR, at 40 days. You know, and I told you before, 40 is a little bit of wiggle room because maybe not in the Sirach or Ivarim, even if it's 40, 41, 42, you can do a sonogram. But unfortunately, they stopped doing it so early because of those medical problems. So for a while, I had to go to Philadelphia to get it done early, certain hospitals doing it early. So now it's an earlier stage than amnio, but not with, I don't think it's going to make the 40-day plus cutoff point. Anyway, he comes to me, and what should I do? So you know what I did? I'll tell you the truth. I wasn't interested in being part of this abortion process. I told him, call up a certain rabbi. Who was there? I'll tell you who the rabbi is, since you can come to you in your experience. His name is Rabbi Rabinowitz, Baruch Rabinowitz. He is a son of the rabbi who was here for many, many years in our yeshiva, Rabbi Jacob Rabinowitz. Some of you may know him, I'm sure you know him. Baruch Rabinowitz, how did I know about his situation? I think I went to see once, I think in Pittsburgh, if I'm not mistaken. And someone had written an article for the Jewish Observer about Down syndrome, and I went to speak, they wanted to talk to me, and they gave me a tape from Baruch Rabinowitz. Baruch Rabinowitz on his tape is as follows. He and his wife, also when she was young, not someone in the 40s, I think it's still in the 20s, maybe 30 or early 30s, had a Down syndrome child. He describes there. He called up his Rebbe. His Rebbe is the famous Rebbe Moshe Shapiro, the ones who had the Hashkavah Shirim, in Yerushalayim. This is Rebbe. He tells us the conversation in Yiddish. It's Kukni Mazel Tov. You got a Mazel Tov? You have us? A Yingle. A boy. Rebbe. Yeah. But it's a problem. Vos, what's the problem? Downs. A Downs child. So Rebbe Shapiro, without banning knowledge, says, as kumte a tuple to Mazel Tov, you get a double Mazel Tov. Now you have to be a big Baal Mashava to figure what that means. He meant was it's going to be a bracha for you and your family and the community. There's so much inspiration to have in these children, and he went on a campaign to. So I gave this tape, not the case. I heard the tape. I gave the phone number. You told this Talmud of mine. Call him. He called him. The families I think even met in person. She, the wife, of course, is the one that is the biggest all, went to meet the Rabinowitz family, and they kept the baby. They had another baby. That was a girl, I believe. They had another baby, a boy. I went to the bris, and at the bris, I met this child. You know, it was what's called high-functioning Downs. Everybody say it's not so simple, these questions. I think that, you have to be case-by-case over here. Nothing is so posh, really. They're not simple questions. Yes?
So about the eater, if the doctor's a goy, isn't that totally different?
That's true. That's true. It would be a greater lift na'iva if the doctor's a goy. If the doctor's a goy, it's a greater lift na'iva because, according to many poskim, you're running into a situation of, for him, ritzicha, and there's no, you can't be matter ritzicha in this case. If the child is, the mother's in danger, it'll last for 2 days in Tarsus, so you can rely upon the mekilim. But less than that, could be not. So listen, even the lift na'iva is somewhat mitigated by the fact he's doing this every day, 100 times, you know. It's not as if he's you're giving the only case he's going to do in his whole lifetime. So I'm not saying it eliminates the, but it mitigates the listening. Yes?
One issue which is definitely much more touchy than this, moms are, kids are moms are, is there some room to...
But let me explain for those who don't catch it. A woman comes to you and says that I'm a married woman, I'm married to Reuven, and my husband Reuven was out of town, and I couldn't overcome my Yetzer Hara, so I live with Shimon, and I'm pregnant from Shimon. Child could be a wonderful child, a concert violinist. I mean, maybe Shimon was one of those guys. I don't know what, but still gonna be a mamzer. So once again, you're dealing with a very slippery situation. On the one hand, a perfectly healthy child is going to be born, we assume, for all we assume. On the other hand, assuming that this child will be deemed a halachic mamzer. By the way, that's not to be taken for granted. Because, the concept of Roe Vila Sahara Baal, and who she's believed, da da da, and then you end up in this funny fantasy land where you may know the child's a mamzer, but the halacha views him as a non-mamzer. Let's say the worst case, the husband's been out of town for 3 months straight.
What's the brother and she's not married or something like that? And that's even more.
Okay. She was attacked by her brother, or she lived with her brother, whatever it may be, and it's going to be a mamzer, and it's going to be a real disaster. So. I don't want to compare it to Tesac, where the child is going to be nebuch, so disabled and dying at age 3. But at the same time, you have to take into account that the child comes to this world with the title mamzer attached to him, not going to be an easy life. So again, I'm not giving any pesach at all on it, and it won't be so easy for them. It's going to be hard, difficulty for many people. So one could conceive of some kind of a possible approach to the Hatera. I think there are talks about it somewhere. But it's not simple. Not simple.
Especially if he goes off the Derek and now he's creating generations and generations of Mamzerim.
Why off the Derek? He can marry a Gioritz and create generations of Mamzerim without going off the Derek.
No, but then they build a Mamzerim and they'll keep it in.
Keep it in. I mean, you're causing incredibly great problems for generations of people. Not possible. Yeah? That's a very good question. Correct. That to me is pikuach nefesh. Again, I don't take this lightly at all. If the woman says, if I have to carry the child, I'm going to commit suicide. Well, I have a nervous breakdown, and I believe that's pikuach nefesh. It's mutter that the mother's life is in danger. But, well, slow. We have to be careful is, every woman has learned this trick, and she'll come to the rabbi, if you don't give me a head of an abortion, I'm going to commit suicide. Right? The guy goes, jumps at you. I'm going to jump off the bridge if you don't. Give me $1 million, or let me graduate without passing a course, professor. Huh? Be very careful not to give into what I call blackmail. So, but if it really means, if it's really true, then I think it's because of that. But you have to be very careful. It has to be right. You have to have a corroboration, because it can be easily abused. This the word gets around. Rabbi X was matir Sarah to have an abortion because she said, "If you won't let me have an abortion, I'm going to commit suicide." So, there'll be a line around the block. I'm going to commit suicide. And then, okay, mutter. It's you have to be very careful. But the principle you're completely correct, I believe. Rabbi Moshe has that too in his Jewish. Yes.
With regard to the issue before, if you have a stringent
Dorein Rit Sicha, and there's an issue here. Brown Rit Sicha, send someone to a lenient Brown, and you really feel that Halach is not like that.
Quite a remote gram. That's my view. If I'm not mistaken, Rav Shlomo Zalman himself sent people to Rabbi Waldenberg in these kinds of situations. They were very good. They were good friends. But that's what I'm told.
But was he himself was?
I don't know what his particular position was. I don't know if he can derive it from any of his writings. But that's what I was told. I brought with me because I got it in the mail this week. I happen to have seen a sign on Atar Rabbi Smedrish. There's an organization there at Stroke here in America called Just One Life. Just One Life gives you the ability for what they call less than $2,000 can save a life. It means a life of a potential life. It was a group which was founded some years ago. Some very chashuva people are involved in funding it and guiding it. The halachic advisor is Rav Pam, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. The executive vice president is Rabbi Katz, Rabbi Marty Katz, who's the Talmud of our yeshiva. For a while it was linked up with the National Council of Young Israel, Eretz Yisrael, and a few other organizations. Certainly it's something which is important. I think that if you can convince, it can go over to people who are simply poverty-stricken. Poverty-stricken people, they can't afford a child. I see that a professional advisory committee includes Dr. Tova Lichtenstein. That's the Rav's daughter. So yeah, big names over here. And she's, I'm sure, has dealt with these things. You have Dr. Steinberg. I brought his encyclopedia with me just to show you. There's a big piece in his, Dr. Steinberg has an encyclopedia called Encyclopedia Hilchatit Rifuit. Now the Hapala is quite an extensive piece. Very, very extensive about, you know, what is Hapala. It gives you all the ins and the outs and the various positions. And I don't have the time to go through it. But he does raise significant points. Simply, how do you do the abortion physically? How do you do it? What do you do? So they tell you they inject certain things, they do certain things, they different kinds of ways how it's done. The more indirect, of course, the better. If they give someone a woman to take a pill, and that causes a spontaneous abortion, you know, it's not spontaneous to take a pill, but and then it just sort of comes out by itself. That's preferred to using some any kind of mechanized thing. They take fluids and then they syringe, they put it into the center. The less direct, the better.
She takes a pill and she's the doctor not enabling it.
That's true. That's the downside of that. You know, there are many ins and outs. You know what they talk about over here? German measles. If a woman has a German measles during pregnancy, I believe the child could be deaf, and it could even be more than deaf, because it could be worse than deaf. Many of us may know, even actually know people who are deaf because their mother contracted German measles during her pregnancy. It is rather frightening, but on the other hand, it doesn't mean it's going to happen. Just because you have German measles doesn't mean the child will be impaired in any which way. Doesn't have to be. I will tell you, I'll just end with two stories. You get the chills with these stories. Again, I'm not getting any psak, just telling you two stories. One story involves a friend of mine whose wife somehow fell, and she had an X-ray, and it turned out later she was pregnant. She didn't realize it at the time. Today any woman, even man, going for any X-ray, they cover you up, you know, with lead. And, I'm talking now over 30 years ago, and so there was this chance that Chalila would cause who knows what. So he went to the Rav. the Rav's apartment. What should I do? You know, the Rav's office, someone didn't give a definitive yes or no answer, but they got the impression of it should do nothing. And the happy ending was, the baby was born, a healthy child, and now the boy's what I would call today an overachiever, Baruch Hashem, with a family of his own. Baruch Hashem, and we hate to think, Chalila, if someone is Chalila Vachas, I can't imagine in my own mind, no one who the person is, Chalila, that could have been, life could have been terminated. I'll tell you one other story. Again, I'm not giving all the details. I want to, you know, this is a story. A couple was in America, and the wife was pregnant, and she had German measles. I think it was German measles, if I'm not mistaken. You know, the danger that the child could be impaired. I believe this was the first child, if I'm not mistaken. So this, the mother had a father, her father, a very distinguished Talmud Chacham, who lived in a different part of the world. And she was so conflicted and torn, she didn't know what to do. So she, in those years, I think they used to use cables, I'm not sure how they communicate, or letters, I don't know, it wasn't like they picked up a phone. You didn't call, it just wasn't done. It just wasn't done. So I think she probably sent a cable to this far part of the world, to her father, who was a great Talmud Chacham, distinguished Rav, telling her of her tale of woe. Here it is, she has expecting, I think, her first child, and the doctor said she had German measles, and there's a potential that the child could be impaired, and what should she do? Nope. You know, it wasn't like, again, you have to understand, the story goes back 40, 50 years ago. You can't even understand it, but pick up the phone, what do you mean? It wasn't that way. You just didn't. It just wasn't that way. You know, I'm telling you for example, when I was in Eretz Yisrael, that I give you as an example. I was in Eretz Yisrael. It was in Tovshin Chov Zayin, and I didn't call my house even once the whole year. For those of you may know, there was a war that year. You know, Six-Day War was that year. I didn't. Nothing. It was unheard of. You just didn't call. That's how it was. You had to go to the post office to call. It just. I'm trying to put it in that mindset. It's even earlier than that. This is certainly over 40 years ago, maybe closer to 50, but a long time ago. Just didn't call. But there was a thing called a cable. I guess it was called a cable. Western Union, the old cables. I think I'm pretty sure there's cable, color, all story and cable. Okay. No communication. That's how it was. This was living very far away from these shores. Nope. She doesn't get a response. She doesn't do anything. Baruch Hashem, baby is born. Absolutely healthy baby. Of course, I can't say what, who, where. The baby is a major Talmud Chacham. It's written Sfarim. She cables back her father. Mazel Tov, had a boy. He cables her back. What? You didn't get my cable? He had sent her a cable saying under these circumstances it's permissible to do an abortion. It never arrived. The mafteach shel chaya is in the hands of the Rabbanu shel Olam. Rabosai, hanistoros l'Hashem Elokeinu. Now we read on Shabbos. A lot of nistoros. We have to learn what the halachas are, what's usur, what's mutter, what's controversial, and even more important, what is nuanced, what has to be treated on a case-by-case basis. We should all be zochet to fulfill the mitzvah of Pru Rehu in good health. Good shots.